Education Subcommittee of the Joint Committee on Ways and Means. This is Wednesday, April 16th, 2003. And we have on our agenda this morning two grant requests from the Department of Education. But waiting for a quorum of committee members to show up, we're going to start continue the public hearing on House Bill 5009, which is the budget bill for the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. And then when a quorum shows up, we will recess the hearing and go into the grant requests. So I will open a public hearing on House Bill 5009. And call forward the commissioner of the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development and ask you to begin your presentation with the warning that we're going to interrupt you when a quorum shows up.
I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I had legislative business to take care of.
Please proceed.
Yeah. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Cam Preuss Frawley with the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development.
Ah.
Ah, see?
Recess the public hearing on House Bill 5009 and open a work session on Department of Education federal grant applications. And I will call forward Linda Ames from DAS, and we have Sue McGlashan from the Legislative Fiscal Office, and with the department. Ms. McGlashan, do you wish to proceed, or how do you want to choreograph this?
Madam Chair, I would just have the department present its request, and then the Budget Management Division and LFO will give their recommendations.
Please proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee. I'm Dave Fazier, Director of Management Services from the Oregon Department of Education. On my left is Linda Ames from DAS Budget and Management, and on my right is Joyce Doherty, the Director of Nutrition Programs at the Oregon Department of Education. Our first grant request is for authority to apply for a team nutrition training grant. This grant will be up to $200,000 for 2 years. The application is scheduled to be submitted by April 23rd. An award is anticipated in August 2003. This grant is from the USDA, and it will be used to develop nutrition education and food service training tools for elementary school nutrition program sponsors and to deliver school meals that meet the 2000 Dietary Guidelines for Americans. The grant is nationwide and competitive, and the funding is not guaranteed.
Any questions for the department on the grant request? Ms. Ames.
I'm Linda Ames with Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend approval of the request.
That's it?
That's it.
Questions or comments for Ms. Ames? Ms. McGlashan.
Madam Chair and members of the subcommittee, Legislative Fiscal also recommends approval of the request. And I would just point out that attached to the letters submitted by the department, you have the analysis by LFO and then by Budget and Management Division. And the department is not asking for any additional staff for this project. They'll just redirect existing staff to work on the project.
Questions or comments from Ms. McGlashan?
Is it fungible?
No, you can't steal it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordon.
I would just like to comment, and this is with great delight. Joyce Doherty and I grew up in the same Portland neighborhoods, and I hadn't seen her for years, and it's wonderful to discover that she's with the department.
Wow.
Thank you.
Thank you. The chair would accept a motion to accept LFO's recommendation to approve the grant request to the full Ways and Means Committee.
I move.
So moved by Representative Smith. Is there any objections to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Representative Smith, would you carry this in full?
Sure.
Second grant request.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The second grant request is requesting authority to apply for a Corporation for National Community Service grant, Learn and Serve, a grant which will be linking history, civics, and service. This grant could total $900,000 for Oregon over a 3-year period. The grant application is due by April 29th, and the request itself was entitled a retroactive request because we were not anticipating being able to get before you before the grant application deadline arrived. We knew you had a busy schedule, but you have accommodated us ahead of time, and we appreciate that.
So this is not actually retroactive?
It is not actually going to be retroactive.
Questions for the department? Ms. Ames.
Linda Ames with Department of Administrative Services, and we recommend approval of the request.
Questions or comments for Ms. Ames? Ms. McGlash.
Madam Chair, members of the subcommittee, Legislative Fiscal Office also recommends approval and is with the other grant attached to the department's letter is the BAM analysis and the LFO analysis. And again, I would point out that this grant does not require additional staffing.
Great. Questions or comments for Ms. McGlash? The chair will accept a motion to recommend that our LFO's approval of the grant request to the full Ways and Means Committee. Senator Mesley so moves.
Sounds good to me.
Any discussion of the motion? Any objection to the motion? Without objection, the motion is carried. Senator Gordley, would you be so kind as to carry this one in the full committee?
Would love to. Thank you.
Thank you. And with that, I'll close the work session on the department's requests, grant application requests, and reopen the public hearing on House Bill 5009. Mr. Bender, could you take us through anything that we need to know at the start of this hearing?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to point out two sets of materials that the department has distributed to you this morning. The first is a set of slides that they will be going through for today's date, which is the second day. You may want to put this into your three-ring binder, the one on the presentation, after the second day tab. We were not able to get that in there this morning. The other item that they've distributed, which I have not looked over yet, is a set of responses to questions that came up yesterday. So please note that both of those items are available to you this morning.
Cam, you could take us through the answers to the questions so we can kind of see what we've got.
Absolutely.
Once again, Madam Chair, members of the committee, good morning. For the record, Cam Croy-Sprawley with the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development. You do have in front of you a rather dense reply to the questions from yesterday, dense as in thick. Not
Since you asked a lot of questions, did you get that from
mm-hmm.
that? Yes, very good questions. What we...
Why today? For me.
I want that in writing.
For me, I say.
What we attempted to do when we returned with your questions was to bundle them because they did seem to follow several themes. And so we have, instead of taking them chronologically as you asked them, we have attempted to bring them together so that they make some sense in our reply. The first question deals with enrollment declines, and that was a question from Representative Bates. We do provide here a relatively short answer to the question, and that is that with fewer resources at the college, there are fewer class sections that can be offered. Fewer class sections means there are fewer seats available. Fewer seats available mean there are fewer students. The decline in enrollment is not a result of a decline in interest or in supply, but rather or in demand, but rather in supply. We will
send your message.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Cam, could you give us a figure on what the demand is, and so that we could back into what the financial needs would be if we were trying to meet the demand for community colleges?
Madam Chair, Senator Meserle, well, the demand as we were forecasting when the actual budget request was being prepared was 3% a year, and we believe that's a conservative estimate.
And you're talking about the enrollment would be an increase of 3% per year?
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, yes, indeed, that's our expectation at the time the budget was prepared, which was about last year at this time. We were anticipating and forecasting. The students are out there, but with reduced revenues, there really isn't space for all of those who wish to attend.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
Could we get a figure of what dollars that would take to fill that demand?
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, absolutely. That's a very salient part of tomorrow's presentation.
Okay.
Is that reasonable to
sure.
have that then?
Please proceed.
The next question came around the support fund. Representative Bates asked how the policy for open access aligns with the current reality of reduced enrollment. What we have listed here is the statutory mission of community colleges. I'm not going to read that to you. Again, we will have more discussion about that tomorrow, but the mission of the community college does say that it would be open to all who can benefit and that it would be reasonably affordable. The third question.
I knew you were going
to do it. First of all, I appreciate that you got this answers back to us so quickly. It is common that we ask questions and we get the answers 2 or 3 weeks later, and it's very difficult back then to have any comment and to work the budgets from that point of view. So thank you very much for bringing this forward. It's been 24 hours. I wish other agencies would do that for us. It's just great to do it. What I'm seeing here is basically you've capped enrollment, and you feel it because of the cost involved. And if that's going to be part of the discussion tomorrow, that's the discussion I'm really looking forward to. Senator Messerly and I and others of the committee, I'm sure, are concerned that we want to be certain that this is just a funding problem. And then we need to know what that funding problem is to resolve it if we possibly can, considering the overall budget restrictions we have. It's a very important discussion, I think, for many of us, because we're talking about public funds going to the most needy people in Oregon to get them an education. As far as when I say need you, as far as education is concerned. So if that's going to be the discussion tomorrow, I would wait until then to have that fully flushed out.
Madam Chair and Representative Bates, that is our intent for tomorrow. I would want to make sure that the committee understood that the State Board of Education has not, in fact, capped enrollment at community colleges. It's really not within their purview. What they have done is frozen the allotment of resources that goes to each college determined by the number of students that was served last year. So it could, in fact, or in effect, at a community college be a cap. But our policy does not include the word a cap on enrollment, because we really feel that that is the local board's decision to make that decision, not the state board's. Okay.
Please proceed.
Funding formula. Senator Messerly indicated that he did have questions about the funding formula. Our response here is that we do have a list, the statutory section of the law that assigns the formula to the State Board of Education, and they have responsibility for both preparing the budget for community colleges and distributing the state aid. We will spend considerable time on both the distribution and the formula for distribution tomorrow.
Senator Messerly, given that you requested yesterday to be able to ask some questions about the formula, would it work for you to wait until Thursday to have that discussion, or do you want to have it before that?
Well, my concern is that if I wait until tomorrow to ask the question, if there's other issues that come up during the discussion, that's
would
our last day. And so
no,
I'd prefer.
No.
Are they coming back Monday?
Yeah.
And perhaps then a better way to do it would be, after we finish going through these questions and answers, let me give you the floor so that you can ask your questions and make sure that they're included in the presentation.
I would appreciate that.
Please proceed.
The last question on page one dealt with benchmarks. Senator Gordley asked several questions. The first was specific to what was the question asked that got to how community colleges were rated as a highly valued public service. Page two actually provides you the question, how good a job do you think Oregon is doing providing government services? And you have the survey as written provided five responses. The surveyors actually read a list of services, and the respondent rates that service. So that's how they come to that 88% approval rating.
And Madam Chair,
Senator Gordon,
the concern here was that K-12 ranked so low, and I was, again, it just raised the question about the question, and this helps. Thank you.
Senator Gordley also asked why the department was using 2000 data rather than more recent 2002 data. On the one hand, we were instructed by the Progress Board to use that 2000 data, but we have included here in this set of responses the 2002 data, and I'd be happy to walk through that, but for time we might just leave that to you. But it has been updated and includes the most recent information.
Perhaps in the interest of time, we should just allow the members to go through that, and if there are questions about it, we could take those up tomorrow.
Madam Chair, I'd be fine with that.
That would be fine with me.
Another area where there were considerable questions was around the GED. Representative Smith asked the question about the GED program truly supported by fees. My response was yes. That was in fact a true statement, but in effect not, and that the state is covered by the fees, but the local test preparation for students to be able to take the test is not. And many of the colleges, if not all of the colleges, do provide that test preparation service with general funds.
Yeah, I just, pardon me, I just have one comment by that, in that we're in our educational system, whereas it's a good thing that high school students who don't do well at the high school level can get their equivalency. However, from a state budgetary viewpoint, we're paying for the same service twice. And that's how I look at it. I have a nephew who was totally unmotivated, very bright kid at age 16, decided to go take his GED, pass and start taking college classes. Mm-hmm. And he was very bright, totally unmotivated, and that's a series of factors I don't wholly blame on the school system, but here we're paying for two programs twice, and you know, the first time around, it's much cheaper than it is at the community college level. But that's a huge, bigger societal problem, I think. We can't solve that here in this committee. I just want to make a comment about that.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Representative Bates asked for more information about those who are pursuing a GED, and particularly those of high school age. What we have in Oregon, Oregon is one of six states that has what's called the GED option, which allows high school students to test. And you have listed here in the response the two factors or guidelines that must be followed in order for that to happen. And that is the ESD or the school district has a GED option waiver. That means they have a plan for how they would work with students. And the school has actually issued the student a signed release from compulsory attendance. 85 schools or ESDs in Oregon have the GED option in place, and that was made possible by Senate Bill 217, which was passed in the 1997 legislature, which provides for students to have that option. And it also provides that if a youth is a GED completer, that they won't be reported as a dropout. There's further explanation there, but what we have tried to do in the two graphs that you have is respond to the question about the age of GED test takers. That 10 times fast.
Representative Bates.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So my sense is that the school district or ESD has to give permission for 16, 17, 8-year-old kids to go into a GED program and take the test. Is my sense of that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, yes, it does have to be released.
And further, that if a 16, 17, 18-year-old passes the GED test, they are no longer considered a dropout from the school system. They're counted as someone who has completed high school?
That is correct.
Okay.
Why?
Seems a little strange to me, but, you know, I'm just looking at this for the first time.
Keeps our numbers up.
And so they have to get permission from the school, and if they complete, they're considered a high school graduate. But they don't get a high school diploma. They're not quite. They're not counted as a dropout.
Madam Chair, Representative Bates, they are not considered a graduate. They are not considered a dropout. They have a credential. They have a high school equivalency.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think you've answered my question.
I think we're in some kind of a nomenclature wasteland here, which I suspect has something to do with some funding formulas somewhere.
Yes, thank you.
Please proceed.
We wanted to bring your attention at the bottom of page 3, and we actually have this in our presentation if we actually get to the GED program in today's meeting, is a report of the people who take the test, why they are taking the test, and that's at the bottom of page 3. 24% say they want the GED as a secondary credential in order to pursue post-secondary education. 30% they want it for a job. 15% say the employer requires it. Continuing on to page 4, and 22% said they just want to have that credential. We have listed other information about who are GED takers, and I'm not certain that I need to read all of this to you, but we did feel that this was an area of great interest yesterday, so if we may be providing more than sufficient information to respond to the question.
Thank you.
Please proceed.
All right. Then there were questions about Carl Perkins. Senator Gordley asked why there was a GPA target of a C or a 2.0 for satisfactory progress. My response was that I believed it was federally a part of a federal guideline, and that was incorrect. Actually, in the planning for the Carl Perkins plan that the state is required to do, a group of high school and community college faculty developed a state plan that set that at 2 or a C grade point average. That was set at a time when the program was changing, and there was concern that we didn't want to unmotivate or demotivate students by setting the GPA so high that they could not continue on. They have adopted the traditional C or better as the baseline requirement. That standard will be reviewed when a new plan is developed this coming year. It is, I think, reasonable to assume that as post-secondary standards, particularly the university system, are being elevated, that we would want to keep an eye on that. Although I would say that many Carl Perkins or professional technical program students see that as I would call a terminal degree and are not in the majority pursuing a university degree, but that's no reason to lower the standard.
Yes.
There were also questions about the performance measures for the Carl Perkins, specifically the one around placement and retention. The response here is that they, in order for a student to fall into a retained category, and you'll remember from yesterday's data that that was a rather high number, higher than we would have anticipated given that we had just looked at other performance that said retention was lower and wage gain lower. That's because they don't just count students who are retained in employment, but students who have also retained or been retained in the program. So they're pursuing their education, and that in this particular program is counted as retention. What this highlights for the department, as well as for the committee, is the fact that we currently manage four different federal funding sources. Each of them has a different definition for what retention is. And our job is to try to keep all of those straight. And then yesterday we did share with you our four different performance and data systems. And part of the reason is that each federal funding source does define their performance indicators slightly differently. And in this particular case, it's not just did you get a job and keep a job when you look at it, retention is. Did you get a job and stay in that job, but were you successful in the program and did you continue in the program? There was a further question about unpacking the data that looked at retention in employment and in education brought by Senator Gordley. So a longer response here, and that is that we were unable to, in the time available, to be successful at unpacking the data as was requested by Senator Gordley. And again, the part of the problem is that different federal funding sources have different requirements and different definitions. We would like to have a little more time to examine this question, because we do think that we could bring you back a more substantial response, but until we really dig in, we don't know that for certain.
Very good. Very good.
And then the last theme of questions still around performance measures was the setting of WIA performance measures. That would be the Workforce Investment Act. And Representative Morgan had asked about the process. And this was specific to, I think I tossed out the term, a regression analysis. I can tell you that when I returned to the office, all my staff were groaning. Oh, you really don't think you're going to be able to explain that, do you? We have provided for the committee this is attachment D, the very last page of this packet. What a regression analysis does is, as we discussed yesterday, it takes a set of factors and weights them, whether I think of it almost as the way in which data systems are programmed, zeros and ones. If you have let's take homeless. If your data in, I'm not sure I'm going to be able to do this very successfully, you all. What it does is it looks at the information that we collect around the economics and the demographics in the state. It looks at what's the level of disadvantaged individuals, low-income individuals. And it looks at a time span and says, has that number increased or decreased over time? We chose 1999 as our base year and 2002 as our reference year. And we did the number of low-income households in the state increase or decrease? If it increased, it got a 1. If it stayed the same or it increased, it got a 1. If it stayed the same or actually decreased, which meant that Oregon became a richer state, then it has a 0. So there's no weight attached to that particular factor. So you have a list here of the factors that are weighted either with a 1 in the factor has been impacted by the economy and the demographics of the state, or a 0. Please don't ask me to go through the coefficient and all of that, because that's all gobbledygook to me. But I do know that when we took our 1s and our 0s, we had more 1s, which meant that we had more impacts, more economic impacts, I hate to say it this way, but in our favor, which meant that we really were in a decline, in a more serious decline than would have been expected. And therefore, when we dump the data of who is actually being served in the Workforce Investment Act program, they are more disadvantaged. They have less skill. Their earnings are lower than they were than the base year, which was 1999, which said to us that we could negotiate with the Federal Department of Labor a lower set of performance indicators, because clearly our economy and the demographics of those we were serving warranted it.
Representative March.
Unless I misread the coefficient category, and looking at your dislocated worker post-earnings model, for example, looking at female at a negative 2094, that means that they're earning approximately $2,094 less than the average of the model. Whereas if they had a bachelor's, they're earning approximately $2,750 above the average. And I think that explains your coefficient.
Thank you very much.
Leave it to the Democrats.
Madam Chair, I would like for Representative March to come sit here next to me, please.
Very good, Chief.
That's what 16 years of school will do. And that's just college.
So noted on the record. Now, does that complete the questions and answers that you have to present to us?
I certainly hope so, Madam Chair.
Okay.
This would be the time, then, to take the questions that Senator Messersley has about the funding formula.
And I would just like to join Representative Bates in thanking you for the work that you put in. I really appreciate your staff getting to work on this and the quality of the information that you brought back. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, thank you. And certainly without their help, this would not be possible. So my thanks as well.
Senator Messersley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Would you like me just to ask the questions on the record so that we can get the answers and discuss it tomorrow?
That would be my preference, but I would like also for the agency to have a clear understanding of what you're asking. So if there's a dialogue that needs to take place, don't hesitate.
That's very acceptable, and I appreciate it. My questions are based on the funding formula for community colleges, and in particular the equalization of funding for community colleges. First of all, I would like to know how that decision was made to start the equalization, who made that decision, when that decision was made, and the justification for changing the funding formula. I would also like to know who wins, who are the winners, and how much that gains for their specific community college districts, the percentage of gain that is for their respective budgets. Likewise, who loses, how much do they lose, and the percentage of their respective budgets. I would like to know, as I understand, some of the districts that are losers had in the past, in the last few years, have increased tuition to make up the difference. I understand that recently everyone has had to come up to that level because of the state's lowering in the funding of community colleges. But it would be meaningful, I believe, to show what the Bend Community College and Southwestern, how much they had to raise their tuition since the equalization formula was put in place. to make up the difference for the funding that those two community colleges left. I think it would be interesting to know the unemployment and the economic differences between the regions and how that compares to the funding formula. And in essence, what I'm talking about is the ability of those regions and the specific community colleges to pay. And I'd just like to make a very brief statement, Madam Chairman, that I think sometimes we in the legislature and society gets confused to the extent that if we're trying to equalize, as is done with K-12 funding, it really doesn't fit, in my mind at least, because K-12 is mandated by state law. Community college and higher education is a voluntary process. So I think when we get in a situation where we try to equalize funding for higher education, we're really, really in an area that needs more discussion. Thank you very much.
Cam, do you require any kind of clarification on any of those questions?
Madam Chair, I believe the one that I think I understand the majority of the questions. Could we revisit, Senator Messerly, please, your question about unemployment, just looking at the I want to make sure that I bring back to you the information that you're looking for, and perhaps if you just said it again, that would help me capture your question.
I would appreciate it, and I can probably say it better. What I'm getting at is that the whole state is in economic stress right now. There's no doubt about that. But some areas have been in economic downturn and stress for 20, 25 years. Other regions have just in the last two or three years started to experience some of these problems. And so what that means is that for some regions who have been dealing with this issue for a long time, the taxpayers in those districts simply don't have the wherewithal, the reserves, to fill the gaps, particularly if they are filling the gaps for regions that have not been so hard for so long. Does that help?
Yes. Thank you very much.
Any further clarification?
No. I think I understand the question. Thank you very much.
Okay. We'll look forward to this discussion tomorrow. And having, I think, exhausted everything except your continued presentation, let's take up where we left off yesterday.
Madam Chair, we were at affirmative action when the committee finished. Slide number two is a review of the affirmative action of the department, and that being a picture of 47 employees, and I can quickly review them. It's a rather female place to work, I think I could say. And there are probably all kinds of good reasons for that. Our management professional ratio is 66% female and 34% male. People of color make up 4% of our workforce, and 2% is certified disabled. We are underrepresented in several areas, and they include disabled African American and Hispanic groups. I would like to note that we have increased our efforts in our outreach, as we have open positions, to ensure that we are that doing more than our level best at outreach to people of color, and particularly looking at those who provide our services at the local level to entice them to come to the state level.
Senator Gordley.
Madam Chair, I would like to inquire here for some more detailed information. The issue of underrepresentation is an opportunity. And I would like to know what are the specific plans for dealing aggressively, and I underscore aggressively, with the issue of underrepresented groups. And we're talking the disabled, African Americans, and Hispanics. again, detailed information, aggressive plan.
Please proceed. Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I understand your statement, and we will return with such. Slide 3 brings you a picture of the students and clients that are served by race and ethnicity at or through the community colleges and the workforce investment areas. And while the agency does not follow this same example, I do want to highlight that both the community colleges and the workforce providers are making a substantial commitment to serving all segments of the population, and many of the programs do have very aggressive and very detailed plans to ensure that underrepresented individuals are finding access at both workforce programs and in the community college. Okay, we're going to move on to the workforce development system in Oregon. Yesterday we talked in our overview about the federal resources. Thank you. About 25% of the agency's budget, or $112 million, does come from the Federal Workforce Investment Act. In order to deliver what we think is a system of workforce development, that requires strong partnerships at the state and local level. And it makes this particularly important as we try to return people or keep people working. Slide 4 gives you the vision and the mission for the system of which Oregon's Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development is but a part. I would call your attention to the logo. We call that the Oregonoid. I'm not exactly sure where that term came from. But the agencies that are the partners in the workforce system at the state level have all adopted this particular logo as a way of trying to communicate both at the state level and to our local partners that we are in this together, and that when you see this logo, you can expect a certain set of services, which will be part of the presentation. The workforce system, again, as CCWD is a part, serves over 19,000 employers every year and 446,000 workers and job seekers. That includes the Employment Department, the Department of Human Services, community colleges, workforce providers, and it's all in an effort to help Oregonians find their first, next, or better job. Slide 6, because it's rather confusing, and it's my hope that a little tutorial will help. The U.S. Department of Labor does send the resources to the governor. The governor has congressional authority to distribute these funds. The funds come through then the third layer of boxes, which is the State Board of Education has responsibility for adult basic education. The governor's Workforce Investment Board has at least advisory responsibility around the Workforce Investment Act Title I-B, or one-stop resources, which the department also administers. And then the Oregon Economic Development Commission has responsibility for small business development and other commerce programs that come from the department. All of these are delivered then at the local level, and I must tell you that we have this is as clean a chart as we can make. As you might imagine, it could be a very fuzzy looking thing. The next slide is more specific to the Department of Community Colleges, again showing the Department of Labor and the U.S. Department of Education.
Question. Representative Smith. Regarding the workforce development dollars that the governor has
what's the word I'm looking for? Purview to assign. Have you been in contact with the governor or his staff about how he wants those dollars, what emphasis he would like in this area?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, yes, we certainly have.
And does your budget reflect his priorities, or have you worked that out yet?
Representative Morgan and Representative Smith, the answer is yes, to the extent that they have clarity of vision.
Okay.
We are
working it out.
Yes.
Okay.
But I would remind the committee that yesterday we did talk about the knowledge worker and we did talk about health care as strategic priorities for the department. And those are initiatives that the governor's office has embraced.
Because the Department of Human Services budget also has workforce development funds, whether it's the same thing or not, but there is an overlapping service within that agency.
Mm-hmm.
In this agency, I look at it as an overlapping services. Whether it is or not, I don't know. But I think those are two areas where dollars can come together to unite. Are you familiar with that?
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, well, I venture to say yes, although you'll correct me. If my assumption is the Department of Human Services, through the TANF grants, the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, mm-hmm. actually contract considerable portion of their service to community colleges and the workforce investment areas. We are the prime contractor for TANF grants in the state, so that the welfare agency or the TANF agency and DHS did not rebuild and reduplicate a set of services that were available in the state through either community colleges, the employment department, and other workforce agencies.
So I would imagine if there's going to be any, and I'm really searching for words here because we're just scratching the surface of this, any consolidation or any consolidation of monies and services, that reorg, if you want to call it a reorg, I don't even know if that's probably not a strong enough word, at the governor and your level is still taking place. So we really haven't been solidified on what direction we're going in that area yet.
Madam Chair, Representative Smith, that's correct.
Okay.
But we certainly recognize the need to not waste a single nickel of the resources that the state has, and duplication is on everyone's mind.
Thank you. Please proceed.
I'm on slide 7. What we are attempting to do with this slide is just give you a picture of those local entities that we interact with and where the resources come from. I want to draw your attention to the left-hand circle, which is the local workforce areas. Those are the areas that receive the one-stop services or one-stop funds and the dislocated worker funds, and that community colleges do receive the adult basic education funds. It was a request for proposal process, but all the colleges were successful in being the contractor for that service. We also wanted to point out that many of the local workforce investment areas on the left-hand bubble actually do provide resources to the community colleges through contracts for training services. Again, trying not to duplicate the expertise that exists in the state, but actually buy it.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
Thank you. If we could go back to the previous slide. The representation, it would appear that the Oregon University system is not a part of Oregon's workforce system. Is that what you mean to portray, or is there something else that we should understand about that linkage or not?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, that's an excellent question. It's by omission. It's not. We have a slide further on that does clearly indicate that the university system is a workforce partner. They do not receive funding directly from the Department of Labor, which is what we were hoping to display in this, and that's I think, short-sighted on our part not to include them. This is a map you saw yesterday. We attempted to color it up a little more and bring it back so that you could clearly see that we do have contracts with these seven areas. We have agreements with them. They receive the federal workforce dollars to provide services for Oregonians. And the next slide, which is slide 9, talks about those partners. And doggone it, the university system is not listed. We will correct that, because they are a partner. Slide 10, when we talk about the workforce development system in Oregon, what do we really mean? It seems like a rather nebulous thing. It can be anything in or nothing at all. When we talk about it, we talk about that there are 40 one-stop career centers across the state. They are there to help people who are looking for a job or who have a job and are looking for a better job get the information they need about where that job might be. So it includes statewide and regional labor market information. Where are the jobs? What do they pay? What are the openings? What's the outlook for that? Is that a dead-end job, or is it forecast to grow? We also, through this system, provide recruitment for new and expanding businesses. It's a place where a business can go and get referrals for positions that they might have open. It does have resources it can target to upgrading the skills of incumbent workers. And it is a vital linkage to respond to layoffs across the state, and actually have served, perhaps unfortunately, 7,000 workers who've lost their job in the past year.
Madam Chair.
Senator Gordley.
How many of the 40 one-stop workforce career centers will we lose in the governor's budget?
Madam Chair, Senator Gordley, I'm uncertain that I have. I'm certain I don't have an answer to your question. Right now, the one-stop centers are the backbone of that funding is federal, but there are many partners that are also general funded, although they aren't. They don't tend to be the majority partner, such as DHS. And community colleges and K-12. And in those places, their ability to be a partner and pay part of the rent and have a presence and visibility at those centers will likely diminish, but I'm unable to clearly answer the impact.
It would be good, Madam Chair, to understand, pardon me, the impact, how many will be lost and where around the state.
Madam Chair and Senator Gordley, to further answer your question, we are expecting a decrease in federal resources under the Workforce Investment Act, and I must say it's quite a shock given that we have the highest unemployment in the nation.
Can you talk to us about the magnitude of the decrease?
Right now, we believe it'll be about $3 million.
Which is what percentage of the budget?
All right, public math people. So if it's an annualized $55 million and a loss of about 3.5%, close to 6%.
So
close to 6%.
Now, just to make sure I've got this straight, so the $3 million decrease, is that a biennial or an annual decrease?
I'm sorry, that is an annual figure.
Out of a $55 million annual budget,
yes.
You will lose $3 million.
Yes.
Representative Smith?
No, that's fine.
Federal workforce dollars.
Federal, yes, Madam Chair.
And this is the federal portion of the funding.
Yes. I'm on slide 11, just wanting to talk a little bit about a little more about workforce career centers. They are places where job seekers can get in. The reason they're called one-stops is because previously the way the workforce system worked is you went from place to place to place as you progressed in your job search. You might go to the employment department to file your unemployment claim. You might go to the community college to get your adult basic ed skills if that was necessary. You might go to another place to get an assessment of what your skills were. What we've done is combine these services in one place, so that you don't have to run around town, that you actually can go to one place and get a variety of services that you need to get reemployed or to find the skills you need to retain your job. So we think of them as community resources, such as libraries. They are guided by local workforce investment boards, just as community colleges are guided by their local boards. We have local workforce boards. These are required under federal law. And the services offered are, again, developed locally. This is a map, difficult map. It does give you, yes, and but I would point, thank you, I have a prop. You have at your place an annual report. It's a requirement, but even if it weren't a requirement, we would probably find the resources to do this. This is an annual performance report for the Workforce Investment Act, and the centerfold, which is on pages 12 and 13, is the map that is displayed for you.
Madam Chair.
Representative March.
Thank you. I notice Roseburg and the Dalles. Roseburg has four and the Dalles three. Is there an advantage of having more than one stop in a community of those sizes?
Madam Chair, Representative March, they believe so. The local Workforce Investment Board has certified the services. There is a fairly rigorous process that the local board has adopted in order to certify a one-stop, and a certification requires that certain services are available to the public. And I would say, although I can't speak specifically to either the Dalles or Roseburg, sometimes partners are unable to relocate themselves. Either they have lease restrictions or they simply don't have the resources to pack up and move so that they could all be in one place. And we've tried to be cognizant of that and have them link through the internet or in other ways so that the customer still doesn't have to jump around, that they get a broad array of services when they stop at the one stop.
Please proceed.
Yes. Slides 13 talks about the kind of services that a job seeker might find. I have already alluded to these. This is just a little further depth. Including resources for assessment of workforce skills, abilities, and readiness, can produce a resume. I'm going to pick up the pace here a little. Slide 14 and 15, what employers could expect at a one-stop workforce career center. Employers, if they're expanding their business, many of the one-stop services now have a special place for employers. We figure that by traffic alone, having employers and job seekers in the same place, there's more opportunity for people to find good employees and for job seekers to find good jobs. Slide 15 continues, but this is when an employer is faced with a layoff, and we've had a good many of those around the state in the last 18 to 24 months. Employers can expect from their one-stop, rather than having the employment department come and say, this is how you fill out your unemployment forms now that you're unemployed, and here's this other set of services that comes from this other community-based organization. They go as a team, and we call them rapid response teams. We want them on-site in 48 hours. Of course, that also is dependent upon having the employer communicate with us, and sometimes that's difficult. But we want to be able to deliver hope to those dislocated workers just as fast as we can and get them connected to a system that can so that they can be reconnected with their community having been a dislocated worker years ago, I can tell you there's nothing quite so devastating as coming to work and having a pink slip and not knowing what you're going to do next. This response team provides the hope that people need, that there is a next job for them. The committee was interested in our organizational chart and what members of the agency support the activities of the Workforce Investment Act. What you have here in the color blue are, and on your paper there just shaded, are people who are 100% dedicated to this effort. As I shared with you yesterday, we have 16 people that are funded with two or more fund sources. I myself am funded with, of course, a portion of the Workforce Investment Act dollars. But these are people who are dedicated to that effort. And they make up members of the state's rapid response team because we feel it is our responsibility to lead that effort. Yesterday, we also talked about the performance. The committee asked what was the national rating. So we have reproduced the Workforce Investment Act performance goals and actual targets for the most recent year available, and that's 2001. So we have added a column that says what is the national average program goal, just for reference for the committee. And we asked ourselves when we finished our negotiation process a year and a half ago or 2 years ago, why did we go so high? Because as you can see, many states did not press, but that's because we started from our benchmark or our baseline where we were and tried to project where we might be. And clearly when you aggregate 50 states, that average can sometimes be lower and sometimes be higher.
Thank you.
Senator?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The one category on dislocated workers, I see we're below the national average. Why are we different there? We were positive in all other areas as I look at this.
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, you're speaking of the earnings replacement rate?
Yes,
we have our actual replacement rate of wage has fallen, and our negotiation that we are currently underway has us at 81%. Just the reality is that wages are dropping. Many of the jobs that have been lost in this state were high-wage jobs, manufacturing jobs, and we're trying to be prudent in what we propose.
If I could have follow-up.
Follow-up?
What that means is that Oregon's being hit harder by this downturn or recession than other states?
Chair Morgan and Senator Messerly, I absolutely believe so, yes. Certainly longer and deeper impact.
Thank you.
You should also have at your place something that is it's a flyer. It's called a resource guide. You have this. This is a tangible example of how a workforce partnership works in the state. This was put together by the Marion Polk and Yamhill partnership. And it's a resource guide for both employers and workers about what services one could expect to find if you were dislocated or if you were just looking for a job. And I brought it as an example of if any of us were tomorrow to get that pink slip, there is something someplace you can go, but there is also something you can walk away with that will provide you hands-on efforts. I would like to bring your attention to the back fly leaf at the bottom, across the bottom, are the partners that are participated both in the development and resource sharing of the production of this guide. And it shows you the Employment Department, the community college, the local workforce board, the Mid-Willamette Staffing Association, that's private staffing associations in this community, are part of this effort. SEDCOR is the economic development partner for Marion, Polk, and Yamhill counties, and an employer council. So we just wanted to make sure that the committee had an example of a resource guide. Because we have had considerable activity in the dislocated worker area, and it continues to be funded separately under the Workforce Investment Act, I did want to make sure that the committee had a slightly deeper view of the programs and services that are available to dislocated workers. And dislocated workers are those workers who are laid off through no fault of their own. They don't leave the job. They are displaced. Slide 19 gives you a picture of the members of the team that I've already talked a little bit about, and the assistance that can be provided. On-site pre-layoff services, what we try to do is be there before the layoff actually occurs so that we can have a conversation with the workers about what services are available to them. And slide 19 is a discussion of just some of the services that are available. Slide 21 is a recap of the dislocation if you weren't already down enough about our economy. This shows you that in the last 18 months, Oregon has 36,000 plus workers have been laid off. 323 companies have been affected. There, of those companies, over 154 of them were not just ones and twos. There were 50 or more. That's called a mass layoff, which requires considerable effort, of course, and service. And 67 of these were plant closures. We have been able to access an additional $14 million from the Department of Labor under the National Emergency Grant, which Mr. McGee did speak to yesterday about moving, providing the department with an non-limited fund for the receipt of those dollars. We are pleased to have been able to capture that resource. I would tell you it is getting increasingly harder. The Department of Labor is, I think, raising the bar for everyone to receive those services. But we do currently have an additional $14 million in the state to serve workers. I'm going to stop here and ask Frank Brown to join me at the table. And with him is Susan Crossman. These are people who will share a short story with you about dislocations and a program there to help them return to work.
Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Frank Brown, and I work for Portland Community College as an education coordinator for the Career Pathways Program of Portland Community College and Mount Hood Community College. In Multnomah and Washington County's Title I-B funds for dislocated workers has been used to leverage the six-month window of opportunity laid-off workers have to collect unemployment. For 2.5 years, the Career Pathways Program has provided training for these workers. Students earn college credit, increase their skills, and have the ability to move into better jobs all while they're on the training unemployment insurance. The Career Pathways models is not about teaching technical skills only in the classroom. They provide comprehensive services with wraparound. An integral part of the program is a cohort learning model that allows the students to join an adult learning group to be successful in community college. Job readiness training gives the students the skills to find and maintain the new job, internships with a chosen career to build professional relationships and gain real-world experience. One of the focuses of the students is to develop a career pathway and an education pathway. As an As an education coordinator, I provide whatever support I can for these students so they can be successful in community colleges. Students attend school 20 to 30 hours a week. They collect their unemployment insurance during this time, and they gain between 12 and 18 credits per term. People like Susan, a laid-off worker, can be trained into a new career path while collecting a weekly benefit check from the Employment Department. Susan will be ready for a new career in as little as 6 months. I'd like to introduce Susan and have her tell you a little bit about her story and how she's experienced this program at the community college. Susan?
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair and representatives.
Pull the microphone a little bit closer to you.
My name is Susan Crossman. In October 2002, I had gotten laid off from my job. The first time in my life I had to go and file for unemployment. It was very devastating. So what the unemployment did, they went ahead and they referred me to the Capital Career Center, and I went through an orientation there, and they referred me to Frank Brown for the Dislocated Workers Program. I had got into the program. I had registered for college for the criminal justice system, and if it wasn't for this program, I think I was very devastated. It helped me gain the confidence that I needed to push forward and look forward to a career instead of having to take any job that I felt necessary to support my family. And being a single mother, it is very difficult, especially filing for any other programs where, you know, you fall through the cracks. So what do you do? I never had the opportunity to get an education, and they helped prepare me for different kind of resumes, informational interviews, and just for cross training, and it's been a great experience. I would not trade this experience for anything. It has been performed in a group setting. The group setting has been very informational, very supportive, not just with all the things that we're learning to transfer our skills in the career change, but also personal to help. So it's been a really nice environment, the chance to be educated and to push forward into a new career.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I think we're ready to proceed here.
Madam Chair, thank you. Nothing like a true story. I want to switch now to another effort that the department has undertaken as part of our workforce effort, and that's a program or a project called the Current Workforce Project. We've just heard from someone who lost their job. What we would hope is that by investing in the skills of people while they are still on the job, they can be more resilient to, if they are laid off, find another job quickly, or be able to increase the profitability of that company so that and productivity so that that company doesn't face a layoff situation. So the department, through and with the advice of the Oregon Workforce Investment Board, has set aside $2 million for the last 2.5 years or 3 years to invest in the skills of the current workforce. We do that by issuing a request for proposal. It's very competitive. We have had over 189 requests for resources. They are screened, read, reviewed, ranked. And in the last 6 rounds, we have 2 rounds a year, we have requested, and slide 22 shows you, that we have had requested $15 million worth of need. We have been the match, because we require a dollar-for-dollar match, and we require a partnership. It has to be a public training entity and a business or labor organization that comes together to build the skills of individuals while they are still working. That matches $37 million. What we've actually awarded is a little over $6 million. We got a jump start on this. The reason why it isn't just $6 million is we did get a jump start because we were successful in receiving a Department of Labor grant as a catalyst. And the total match to date is over $21 million. What I have in slide number 23 is a picture of who has applied, what kind of skills are employers saying, and what from what industries are these requests coming from. They include manufacturing, healthcare, small businesses. They run the gamut, and they are all over the state. Again, on page 23, the right-hand box shows you the skills that they have identified that they believe need to be increased or enhanced by their workers. As a illustration of that grant, I have asked Lori Luchek, who is Vice President for Marketing at Miles Fiberglass and Company in Clackamas, and Peggy Falkenstein, who's the Project Coordinator for Clackamas Community College, to share with you very briefly the project that they built and the impact it had on their current workforce.
Madam Chair, while they're coming up, can I just make a comment?
Go yes. ahead.
I've just been reading through this little newspaper. It's
excellent.
It's just wonderful. I'm thinking that every one of the legislative offices should have one of these just for, you know, constituents call in. Oftentimes our staffs don't know what to do. And I think our constituent work, especially in the interim, will be very heavy as demand increases. So maybe that can be arranged.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, Committee. Thank you for allowing me to speak this morning. In November 2001, Miles Fiberglass...
Could you identify yourself, please?
Oh, I'm sorry. For the record, my name is Lori Luchek, Vice President, Miles Fiberglass, Marketing Director.
Thank you.
In November 2001, Miles Fiberglass and Composite was awarded a workforce development grant. Shortly after, in December, we lost 60% of our business. Our first thinking was, what a bad time to start a workforce training project. Then we changed our thinking to, what a great time to start a workforce training project, and decided, instead of laying off all that we would have, we would retain most of them and would invest in our workforce by raising their skill level and keep more labor than was needed and avoid turnover costs. We could then attract new markets that demand higher quality by higher skilled workforce. Or if business picked up, then we'd be ready to go out without hiring a whole new workforce and training them all over again. The project consisted of a partnership with Clackamas Community College as the fiduciary agent and supplier of workforce training, and the Tugman Group as the project coordinator. The project was a three-tiered progressive training program through Clackamas Community College. At the first level, we offered on-site English as a second language course. The next level was a customized manufacturing overview class that enabled them to have an overall understanding of how their job fits into the overall manufacturing process. The top class offered was a certified composite technician course, complete with individual certificates awarded by the American Composite Manufacturers Association, and $1 an hour raise. A person with this certified composite technician certificate is highly sought after in our industry, demands higher wages. It is quite an achievement to receive a CCT certification. By taking this approach, we sent the message to our employees that they are important at every level, and we wanted to invest in their future. We had some employees whom we had laid off a few come back just to attend the classes on site. In a year that could have been low morale, frustrating, and depressing, we ended up having a highly motivated and exciting fun year. You can imagine going into thinking that you're going to have pink slips throughout the company, and instead they're in a conference room gaining education and training. It was quite a year. When we interviewed one of our employees who had been through the complete program and received a CCT certificate, we asked him about the dollar raise, thinking that he would be real excited about this. He stated to us, we are not doing this for the dollar raise. We are doing this for the CCT certification. And they were mighty proud to have that certification. In the end, we ended up with 40% of our workforce CCT certified, one of the highest percentages in the country. We now have our own CCT instructor, one of the only 5 instructors in the country, so we can continue to certify future employees as well as offer the course to other composite companies in Oregon. Some of the byproducts that came out of this training is one of our employees signed up for ESL classes on his own time after work. We made the list of 100 best companies to work for in Oregon. We are highlighted in the annual Oregon Workforce Development Report that you all received earlier. An article was written in the Clackamas Review and Clackamas County Economic Update. Our turnover is down and our efficiency is up. And we are now better positioned in the marketplace to acquire more business. In order to keep our highly skilled workforce, we needed to attract new markets and new business. We can now break into markets that demand high quality, but needed people to know about our highly developed workforce. We developed a quality brochure, such as this one, and I'll leave it for the record, to talk to people about all of our quality and how we do our training at our company. We also have a toolbox filled with information about our workforce and our training. The end result is so far we have attracted new business from Altman Browning, a product development company that produces medical equipment. They were being supplied from a company in Canada. Gunderson Railcar, which was getting their products from Texas, and Siemens, who produces light rail train parts, which was using suppliers from Germany and California. We are so pleased with the partnership with Clackamas Community College and the Tugman Group for helping us raise skill levels of our employees and attracting new business contributing to Oregon's economy. If I had one recommendation to you as you consider this line item budget, it is that money can really do the most good, like it has for us, when it is directed to the workforce through the colleges. These training dollars, in our opinion, did just that. It strengthened the skills of our employees and us as a company, in turn bringing vitality to Oregon's economy. Thank you.
Thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Peggy Falkenstein, and I'm a project coordinator in the project that Lori Luchik was speaking about through Clackamas Community College in the Customized Training Department. And most of you have probably seen this type of schedule that the colleges send out, might come to your door, your local library. Well, what I'm going to talk about is not inside of there. These are classes for various degree programs and special events, and of course, it's a large part of our role that the role of community colleges plays in the community. But I'm going to talk about another very important role, and that's about what Lori was talking about. Clackamas Community College, as well as other community colleges, believes in serving businesses with demand-driven training and education for workforce development. And the college is able to offer this kind of customized training. And again, it's not the type of thing you see in here, although this is, you know, the incredible part of the college is to be able to serve the community in this way. We have another way to serve the businesses. In a year, Clackamas Community College typically delivers and or accredits approximately 400 customized classes for approximately 5,000 employees in 50 to 75 mid to large size businesses. The past 3 annual customer surveys had an average customer satisfaction rating of 95%. Clients include Miles Fiberglass, PCC Structurals, Blunt, Warren Industries, Safeway, LifeBridge, Xerox, Mentor Graphics, and Focus, Clackamas County Sheriff's Department, Northwest Regional ESD, Clackamas Permanente, Kaiser Permanente, Kaiser Dental, Enoch Manufacturing, Carlton Company, West Lynn Paper Company, PGE, Nike, Owens Corning, LSI, Fujitsu, and more. The department that I work in at Clackamas Community College has a motto for business and industry. We listen, we deliver, and we make it easy. As you heard from Lori Luchik, the overall success of the Miles Fiberglass grant is compelling as a result of a customized three-tiered training program funded in part by a grant. 52 employees have received targeted training to improve their skills and employability. In addition, 25 employees are now certified composite technicians, which means they have a credential that's industry-wide. More certified workers in this area than any other workplace on the West Coast, and this significantly increases their employability anywhere in the industry and enables them to earn up to $25 an hour. While only recently completed, this training has already provided measurable results that will continue to emerge for years to come. We thank you for the opportunities you provide for Clackamas and the other 16 community colleges.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Madam Chair, I'd just like to make a comment.
Please.
This whole program has been music to my ears. It's very interesting how Miles Fiberglass was able to turn around and gain market share through training their employees. And that's really a valuable service, I think.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies, for
thank
sharing
you.
Your experiences and your time with us today.
Oh, thank you.
Chair.
Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I apologize to Cam if you covered this previously. I was running some figures here in my own mind and I might have missed it. But back on slide 22, when I look at Region 1 at no grants, no match, and Region 6 in which the grant far exceeded the match, that is contrary to all the other regions, and there's got to be a story here somewhere.
Madam Chair, Senator Messerly, there absolutely is. Region 1, which is Clatsop and Columbia counties, their local workforce board has chosen not to pursue this particular effort, and that's up to them. Region 6, which is Roseburg, or Douglas County, actually was a partner with the department when we got our initial grant from the Department of Labor, and it didn't require match, so they have an additional $433,000 that did not require match. So that would explain the, I hope, for you.
Well, you. As long as we're doing that, how about line 14 there?
Excuse me, Madam Chair, Representative March, you've caught us. Boy, that was a big old grant, wasn't it? $72 million. I'd like to be there. that's apparent.
Is it like 72,000? Yeah, thank you. That's what I thought.
You all are quick. Thank you very much. Before we leave this, I did want to point out that the last folks that were here to testify, Lori and Peggy, you did see them bring a toolkit. An important element of this particular project is that when they are funded, we require that they provide us the curriculum. So we have also built a website. And that website, then we download the curriculum so it is open to the public to use, so that the investment isn't proprietary. Now, there might be elements of what they have built that is proprietary, and we don't ask them to give us that. But by and large, the projects that we have funded here are on that website, so that whether they're curriculum-based or interview-based or whatever, that is available so that it can be replicated. And I think it's an important feature. And while I'm here at my podium, I would also like to specifically thank Pat Gross, who has been the coordinator of the project since its inception and really helped get it off the ground. And we are pleased that this is a particular interest to Governor Kulongoski's staff and trying to replicate this particular effort. And with that... The last slide on workforce is just so that you don't think it's all rosy and cheerful. There are some challenges that are reported to us by local partners, and they have a lot to do with resources. There is, because of the amount of dislocations, which the board today, we've changed it slightly, has headlines which would indicate where people can go to get skills when they've been laid off. But we really believe that the services for not just dislocated workers, but all workers who are trying to upgrade their skills is woefully underfunded at the federal level. And we are seeking additional flexibility for the Workforce Investment Act. And with that, I'd like to move on to the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. This is a state program. It's funded with lottery dollars and some general fund. There are two programs, and I'm going to leave most of the talking to the current chair of the Youth Conservation Corps Advisory Committee, and that would be Senator Vern Duncan, who is here today. So with that, Senator Duncan. And we also have a student who has participated.
Okay.
Senator Duncan, welcome.
Madam Chair.
Senator Duncan, in my heart, you'll always be a senator.
Thank you very much. As unaccustomed as I am appearing before a group like this, it is a pleasure to be with here. And I want to remind you folks that always remember that when you're up there, you got to be nice to the people on the way up, because you may meet them on the way down. So I just bring that to your attention at this particular point. It's really my pleasure to be here to talk about this particular program, a program that it's been dear to my heart for many years. In fact, in the early 70s, one of the first pilot programs, which was federally funded, was done when I was the superintendent in Clackamas County. In fact, Jan Colton with Community College, Portland Community College, was very involved in that program then. The state picked it up in the 70s and watched it flourish. Well, flourish, we'd love to see it really expand. I served as the Senate representative to the committee, and then when I left the Senate, remain as the public member. There are 9 members on our advisory board, 3 appointed by the governor, 3 appointed by the president of the Senate, and 3 appointed by the Speaker of the House. And it's really a very exciting program. I believe the chair has been a member of that commission too. And I think the potential, and I don't think it's ever reached the potential that it could. There are many, many opportunities for young people that this really could enhance. You do have, I believe you have this brochure, right? And it highlights the activities for 2002. You'll note that the Summer Conservation Corps program has at least one crew in every Oregon county. And what we're doing, by the way, 532 young people are served by that particular program. And we're leveraging about 3-to-1 with the state money. So it really has a far-reaching impact on young people throughout the state. There are some matching funds. There are some other programs involved, and that would be through the Marine Board and through the Parks Commission. They do have some funds that go into this because we do work for them. Right now, and one of the concerns I know some of you would have, and we've talked about it before, we're really trying to improve on the number of minority students we're reaching. What we're trying to do is to train crew leaders, and so as you get the crew leaders trained, you're attracting other people. And so that is an area where we're running, I think, about 16% minority right now. But I think that needs to be enhanced, and I've talked to our director, Ron Adams, and we'll be working on that particular one. In the area of the Community Stewardship Corps program, this one, we work with school districts, and we're working with 54 Oregon school districts. We accepted 467 students last time. And this program also does, and I think they meant to have it on the chart up there, but you didn't have it. That the scholarship program is enhanced with that, and so really we're providing scholarships for probably See, we're providing scholarships. We have about 750 have been awarded now. A lot of them have not been used. And this, these scholarships are being used at community colleges, technical schools, and other universities. And a number of our people have already gone on to receive degrees. So what we're really doing is we're working with young people who really are at a disadvantaged level, who do need this kind of a service. As a school man and working with schools, I see this as having a great potential. Obviously, I don't see it being enhanced at this time. We just would love to be able to maintain maintenance of the program. But in the future, I think this program really has a great possibility of working with people. Right now, we're working very closely with the task force of children of incarcerated parents. Children of incarcerated parents. There's a task force, and we're working very closely with that. In fact, I was just talking to Claudia Black in the hallway, who is really excited about the possibilities of this program. And they see it as really something that can enhance what they're trying to do. She was reminding me, and I didn't think about this, 20,000 children right now have a parent in prison in the state of Oregon. Now, not that we're going to get to this, but what I say, the potential out there working with people is really great. I just would hope, and I know we're in tight times, and I know everyone was always talking to you about having sat on that particular dais up there. I know the comments you always get, this will leverage, this will do this, and this will do that. I think this program really needs a good look at it to maintain it, because its future, I think, is extremely important, and I would hope that we could continue it. Now, there's another factor. We talk about the educational value, because the leadership skills that they're learning and the possibilities of going on to colleges, university, trade school, and so forth. Those are all great opportunities for young people. We don't want to forget that they also end up doing a lot of work for us, and they're out there during the summers. They're working. The trails are getting built. Fences are replaced. Noxious weeds and invasive species are eliminated, and community projects get completed. So it is. We want to remember it's an educational program. It's a leadership kind of a program, a skill kind of a program, and it's also a conservation program serving the state of Oregon. So it's an exciting program. When you really get the excitement is when you go out in the field and you spend time and you watch what's happening, what they're doing, and you see kids who ordinarily might be a problem on the streets. And these are kids who are doing things, and they're exciting, and you come away just saying this program needs to be enhanced throughout this state. So, and I recognize if you look at the priority list, and we've talked about it with the community colleges, and it's, you know, I've been involved when I actually headed the community college part of it when I was state superintendent, you have to put the priority list, and of course your first priority will have to be to the community colleges. And so it looks like it's down there is an add-on kind of a thing. But this program used to be with the governor's office. It's been moved around a lot because of the educational and the workforce nature of it. Its placement's always been a bit difficult. But it's an exciting program, and I would hope that somehow or other we could maintain this program so the potential for the future out there will be enhanced. And I appreciate your time. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you folks might have.
Representative March.
Senator, do you have any ideas for, you know, other funding streams? I mean, you've been around the building for a while and also now with the program. Any ideas of if we're short on general fund, where to tap in? Is there other federal money or some other pot?
Well, Madam Chair and Representative March, you know, if you look at the inside, we have quite a list of people who are involved with the program, and of course we want to enhance that all we can. We, like every other group, would be going to the business community, trying to find support from them. We have no federal dollars technically involved in the program. But, you know, we're always looking for support, and I think we'd have to continue to do it. We just want to be able to keep existing so we can get out there and find those opportunities.
Thank you.
You have a young lady sitting beside you who looks like she has something
yes.
to add to the discussion, so please proceed.
Why don't you identify? By the way, I forgot to identify. I'm Vern Duncan. I chair the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps. And Nestucca High School is very much involved in this program. If you want to identify yourself with them, go ahead.
Good morning. My name is Lena Erickson. from Nestucca Connections of Nestucca Valley School District. And before I entered into the Connections program, I was a student that had problems with communication of, like during science and stuff, I couldn't really understand. I didn't have a, it wasn't a one-on-one, it was everybody. I just didn't really have a full understanding of the surroundings around me. I was, I'm a very independent person, and with a lot of the students around, I'd just be talking or not paying attention to the teacher. And since I've been involved in Connections, I have upped my grades to A's. I've gotten all A's, and I get my work done on time. And as I'm working with the Connections, I have been offered an internship with the fish hatchery, Oregon Cedar Creek Fish Hatchery in Hebo. And I have been offered an internship. My hours will count toward my work at Mount Hood Community College for a degree in fish biology and hatcheries. And this, we have a scholarship, $125 towards our scholarship funds for every month. We are successfully enrolled in the program. And the scholarship funds, I mean, if I wasn't enrolled in this program, my dad had, in quote, told me that the rest of our family have never been to college and that I wouldn't be successful, I wouldn't go to college. And here I am today, successfully fulfilling my dreams and hopefully proving the point that just because he didn't go or my family didn't go, that I would be successful in my life and do better. And I mean, Connections have been such relief for me. I mean, I actually get my work done on time. I'm there every day. I mean, I've maybe missed a couple days, but I am there every day. I want to learn. I want to learn about the surroundings of my life. I want to be successful. I want to say, hey, I did something with my life. Otherwise, in the regular program, I probably wouldn't be as successful as I am today. And it's just a great opportunity to have Connections as a program.
Thank you very much.
I think we have just hundreds of students who could come before you and give a similar story, and it's kind of exciting, and I'm very proud of
it. Success story. I'm sure that the committee members would join me in wishing you the greatest success
Thank
in your
you.
Academic career.
Thank you.
Vern, where do you want to go? Is this the end of the presentation, or is there more that you wish to talk to?
Yes, I'd be happy to answer any questions you folks might have.
Okay. Yeah, I think that's going to do it.
Okay. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
We know you have a difficult task.
Madam Chair, I do think I'll run through a couple of slides just so we'll have, sorry. I certainly am dismayed to have to follow all that wonderful testimony. Lynette is definitely a bar I shall reach for. But let's talk about the Youth Conservation Corps. There are two elements of the Corps. There is a summer youth program and there is a year-round program, and Lynette was talking to you about the second, the Stewardship Corps, that provides alternative education opportunities for youth. Slide 27 gives you a picture of what the funding has been for the Conservation Corps and the Stewardship Corps, and what the local match has been. It is really a shoestring program, and you can see at the bottom of page 27 the number of youth that have been affected. I think sometimes the words youth served definitely underplays the impact of a program on the life of young people.
Could I ask real quick, what's ADT?
Representative March?
Yeah, what's it's General Fund and ADT. What's ADT?
It's the
Amusement Device.
Amusement device tax. Thank you. I always trip over that one.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative March. Slide 28 talks to you about reported outcomes from the young people who have participated in the Corps. As they leave the Corps, both the young people and their crew member or their crew leaders do an evaluation of the progress, how the students have progressed in their since they have been involved in the Corps. And the Stewardship Corps, you can see there are five indicators, of, including increased self-esteem, ability to work with others, accepting responsibility. And for the Conservation Corps, some of the same, but also working independently, being a leader in a group. Slide 29 gives you a picture of where the Service Corps programs are located in the state, and I believe the handout amplified that to show you all 36 county programs. Slide 30 gives you a snapshot of where they are in our organizational chart. Three individuals who provide the services to the different contract or programs that are offered throughout the state. And I'm going to pause a moment before I move, ask the Madam Chair, we are prepared to talk about the GED for the last 10 minutes, or we can save it for tomorrow, whichever is your preference.
The let us do push ahead and get through GED, because I anticipate tomorrow with the funding issues that we have to discuss that we may end up getting bogged down a little bit.
Yeah. Thank you. So this almost seems anticlimactic since we've had a good bit of this discussion both yesterday and this morning in response to questions, but I wanted to make sure that the committee was familiar with the responsibilities of the department around GED, which does stand for General Education Development. We are responsible for 45 local GED testing centers, and there are an additional 64 sites around the state. We maintain the database at the state. It is secure. You may have read about a month ago a test was stolen in the state of Arizona. They actually carted off a locked fireproof filing cabinet that had some of the GED tests, actual tests in it, and there was a ripple that went nationwide while we all held our breath whether they were going to suspend testing of the GED, because it is a fairly closely held test. But they have worked out that little glitch, and we were up and running and testing the very next day. I don't believe that Arizona is in exactly the same place, but Oregon was able to resume its service. We do issue GED certificates and transcripts, and we do administer the test itself to people who are confined to correctional or health institutions. A picture of how many people are taking the test. In 2002, we had over 10,000 individuals took at least one test. I would back up a moment, and some of the committee may remember that the GED was revamped in 2000, beginning 2002. So the test that had been in place for many years was replaced, and it is has a higher level of proficiency to match the necessary skills and proficiencies that youth and others would find today as they enter the marketplace, and as a mirror of increasing academic rigor. So the 2002 test, as I understand it, as I have not taken it, is more rigorous than the previous test. We do expect that less students will be successful, or it will take more time between test one and the last test for students to finish. But this is slide 32 gives you a view of Oregon's current activity around the GED. And we did already cover the reasons why people identify that they are there to take the GED for further education, for employment, or and or military enlistment. Slide 33 gives you age groups of, and I think this is very telling of those individuals who proceed to the GED, and it is primarily young people who avail themselves to this credential. On the organizational chart, again highlighted in blue or the shaded boxes in your handout, we have three individuals who are dedicated to the activities of the GED. And I might, since I have four more minutes, move on to the Even Start program. This is a request in the governor's budget to transfer Even Start to the Department of Education. Mr. McGee did bring this to your attention yesterday as it is part of the governor's recommended or the governor's balanced budget. And we did speak to the reasons why. Now, I also could go on to talk about the requested positions. CCWD is requesting in Package 103 four federally funded positions. As I mentioned yesterday, we have taken on considerable duties for the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. In many states, it is part of the agency that receives the funds that they are also the staff of the board. Under the previous gubernatorial administration, that was mostly handled in the Governor's Office of Education and Workforce Policy. But in consultation with the Governor's Office, we have agreed to provide the staff one full-time position to staff the board. We also, under that Workforce Investment Board at the state level, they also have a youth council that coordinates the activities of federally required youth councils across the state. So we would ask for a position. We do currently have let me finish. We have one federally funded position. We have increased, as you could well see in our presentation earlier today, our performance and accountability efforts around the Workforce Investment Act, both for the one-stop services and adult basic education. The act, which was passed in 1998 and was implemented in 2000, has a lot of public accountability in it, and we find ourselves feeling more and more the need to have not just a generalist but a specialist in this area. So for these three positions, we currently do have limited duration people filling these roles because they are critical to the success of the program and the board, and would ask that they be made regular. I dare not say permanent. And one position we are requesting to be funded with Perkins dollars. The Office of Community Colleges and Workforce Development does share responsibility for Carl Perkins with the Department of Education. They currently have the staff in their office, and we have been in conversation with them about having a position that uses their resource, the federal Perkins resource, in our office, because we find an increasing demand around initiatives that we think need state leadership to be in our office, and they include such things as the paraprofessional for teachers, which is also part of No Child Left Behind, the healthcare initiative, so that there aren't random, albeit excellent efforts at the community college and workforce development levels and secondary levels of K-12, but that, well, we also have some convening and specialist responsibilities around professional technical programs. So we are requesting that position as well. Questions?
Can you go through the federal reauthorization?
I could.
We can call it a deal.
Yes, happily. It's important to note that there is much activity in Washington, and it doesn't just deal with a war. The Workforce Investment Act was to be reauthorized in 2003. Activity is in earnest around Title I-B, which is the one-stop, Title II, the Adult Education and Family Literacy, and Wagner-Peiser, which is currently delivered by the Employment Department. This will be renamed if what is proposed actually moves forward to the Reinvestment and Education Act. Am I right? The Workforce Reinvestment and Education Act. I'm not exactly sure why we were naming it, but then they didn't ask me. They are going to block grant or at least consolidate grant to states, these three funding, these programs, and provide for the states, at least in their words, more flexibility to use these resources for workforce investment. We just want the committee to be aware that we may, in the interim, be faced with reorganizations or other such decisions, depending on how the reauthorization moves through Congress. Carl Perkins is also up for reauthorization. TANF was supposed to be reauthorized in 2002. It has been delayed, but that's also on the mark, and that affects the work we do. And the Higher Education Act is also up for reauthorization. So we would expect that when we return to you next session, we maybe have a very different presentation to make because of all this activity. And it's just really too early to tell where it will all settle.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
And with that, I will adjourn the hearing. Do you have any announcements before I adjourn the meeting?
I don't believe so.
Okay. I'll go ahead and adjourn the meeting, and we'll reconvene at 8:30 tomorrow morning.
Thank you.